Right, so as was pointed out, there should be many computers with Sage installed here. If you want to use your own computer and you don't have Sage installed for some reason, then you can go to this website and sign up for an account in about 10 seconds, and then you can use Sage through the web there. Also, all the slides and worksheets for what I'll do today, should I put the mic on? I don't know if it's... Okay, so let me know if it's necessary, and I'll put this on. Oops. So, all the slides, everything for today is at this website, which I've written down right here, in case you want to download any of this. This is also printed out and available over there. And in addition, over there, there are copies of the Sage Quick Reference Guides, which are a whole bunch of pages that summarize different areas of functionality that Sage has, like linear algebra, calculus, and so on. And those are, of course, also available online. So the outline for what I'll do today is, first, I'll give an overview introduction to Sage talk, which will be about 45-ish minutes. And I haven't prepared too much, so feel free to ask as many questions as you can. That's usually what happens. And there'll be a demo of Sage during the talk. Then second, we'll have a tutorial on symbolic expressions and plotting, the more computer algebra-ish side of Sage. And this will be more step-by-step, where you'll try out particular functionality, solve some little problems, and so on. And then third, we'll have a tutorial that's more oriented towards numerical computation and how to possibly implement your own numerical type code inside of Sage. Okay, any questions before I get going? And between each of these, there'll be a short break, so you can use the restroom or whatever. And again, you can follow along with this from the printouts that are available or by just bringing up the worksheet on your computer. So I'm going to start by giving you a sense of where Sage came from and what its goals are as a project. It's really... The goal, and I think it's good to keep these goals in mind, because there are a lot of things that Sage could be, and it's not those things. So here's what the goal of Sage is. It's to be a free open source alternative to Magma, Maple, Mathematica, and MATLAB. These are the big kind of self-contained commercial math software systems. They each have different primary domains of application. For example, Maple and Mathematica primarily aim at symbolic computation. But they, of course, also do a lot of numerical differential equations and so on. MATLAB aims really squarely at numerical computation engineering type applications. But they also, for example, recently bought Reduce, which is a computer algebra system, in order to improve their computer algebra capabilities. And Magma is very distinct from Maple, Mathematica, and MATLAB. It aims more at group theory and symbolic algebra that's much more structured than what you find in Maple or Mathematica. And Magma is also very relevant for certain types of cryptography research, number theory research, and so on. It's far more powerful than Maple and Mathematica for certain types of computations, and far less powerful for others. So these are really the big commercial systems, and the idea of Sage is to be an open source alternative to them, as is illustrated here. So it's very similar to how Linux is an alternative to Windows, or OpenOffice to Microsoft Office, or GIMP to Photoshop, and so on. So Sage is an alternative to those. So here's a kind of brief history of Sage. It's a project that I started in January of 2005, so just over 5 years ago. And I started it then. I worked on it for about a year before I had a first 1.0 release. There were maybe two or three users, and there were also developers during the first year. So there were very few people that used it or worked on it. I spent every waking moment working on it, pretty much. And then... Subsequently, after the first workshop where I released the first version of Sage, we've had many, many additional workshops. In fact, in the last 4 years, we've had probably about 30 workshops. I kind of lost count, but there have been a huge number of workshops all over the world. And just to give you a sense of the frequency, the next workshop is in about a week in Seattle, and then there's going to be another one a month later in Berkeley for 2 weeks, and then there's going to be one in Leiden 3 days later in Holland, and then one in Germany, and then one in Austria, and then one in India all this summer. So there are a lot of these workshops. And these workshops inspire a great deal of development of Sage. They're really coding sprint style workshops. They're not so much like this, where they're educational, though they have that component. But usually what happens is there's a little bit like this. Imagine this, and then followed by 5 days of everybody here coding as hard as they possibly can,
trying to make a lot of progress on various projects. That's what these Sage Days workshops are like.
And usually what happens is people decide on various coding projects, and then they always choose a project they think they could finish in that week, and then they fail miserably to finish it in that week, so they have to continue working on it afterwards and report their progress and so on, and deliver something hopefully at the next Sage Days. And the workshops are typically, they typically end up costing about $10,000 to $15,000. Some other things that happened, we got a lot of publicity when we went first place in the Trophies de Libro, which is some scientific open source software competition, and we also have got funding from a number of different organizations, Microsoft, University of Washington, UC San Diego, the National Science Foundation, DOD, Google, Sun Microsystems, and so on. And probably the, so some places, fund you a little bit and then kind of forget about you, and other places it's more systematic and repeated. So the really the systematic repeated fundings come from Microsoft, DOD, and NSF. Those are really the kind of long-term, people with a more long-term interest. And at this point, instead of it just being two or three people, there are hundreds of people that have got involved. I'll show a map in a minute with a list of people that have contributed to it. So it's really very big. There's a developer mailing list that has over 1,100 subscribers and a support list with 1,718 subscribers. And there's typically about 50 messages a day just on the developer mailing list. And then there's actually about 10 different mailing lists for Sage. So I get a lot of email. And there are quite a number of downloads per month, about 8,000. So probably the number of users of Sage is somewhere between, 30,000 and 100,000. It's hard to know for sure. We do have a public website where people can just log in and start using Sage, and that has 30,000 accounts. So I think maybe that's and plus 8,000 downloads a month. So 30,000 is probably a lower bound for the number of people that use Sage. And then the upper bound, I don't know. But I still think it's way, way smaller than the number of users of the like MATLAB and Mathematica. So what is Sage? Let's zoom in a little. By the way, I'm giving this talk in Sage. So what is Sage? The really short description of Sage is it's Python plus lots and lots of math software, all packaged together in some friendly, easy-to-use product. It's entirely open source and free. So the entire collection of software, so there's about 6 million total lines of software that makes up the Sage distribution. And it's all GPL compatibly licensed. Some big chunk of it is BSD licensed. Other parts are licensed under other licenses, like the Python license. But taken together, the whole thing is GPL licensed.
So that's kind of the common thing. And
people talk about, so you're a computer scientist, the previous speaker, and I'm a mathematician, and I'm a professor in the pure math department, if you like, at University of Washington. My research area is number theory, which is pretty far from the sort of numerical computation that a lot of people have been talking about today. Though I do have an interest in numerical computation. But in my kind of research area, the software has all been closed source and commercial or GPL licensed, one or the other. And there's almost nothing in my area that's not GPL licensed. And this has been that way for 20 years. And so with Sage, because a lot of Sage builds on top of those other systems like Parry and Gap and so on that have been around for quite a while, I really had absolutely no choice in what software license Sage would be distributed under. But it's a GPL project. So again, the architecture of it is it's in total about 6 million lines of code, which includes the code of Python and all these other systems that are included in the Sage distribution. And then on top of that, we've written over the last 5 years, these people I've mentioned have written maybe nearly a half million lines of code. And that code is in Python, C++, and a compiled variant of Python called Cython, which I'll talk about more throughout the talk. We also have lots and lots of automated tests. So of that half million lines of code, actually 100,000 lines of it is automated tests of the other 400,000 lines. So we're really obsessed with automated testing. The thing with more discrete mathematical software is, somebody mentioned before that, it's a big numerical simulation. It's a little different than a word processor where a P changes to a Q, because, just maybe a floating point number changes slightly. So with algebraic computation, if a P changes to a Q, that really messes everything else up. And so testing is super important, and it's amazing the extent to which one slight change in one dependency of Sage, like in some component that we include, can have all kinds of weird impacts all over the system. So we have to do a lot of testing to try to nail down what funny thing, what one change happened to cause some other problems. And we put a lot of work into making it so that this automated testing stuff can get run in parallel. So that's probably one of our biggest uses of parallel computing, is just we apply one patch from somebody to add some new functionality to Sage, and then we run our entire test suite in parallel to see what happens. And so, I mean, that has to be really fast. Another thing Sage is, as you're seeing, is it's a sort of cloud application. It's a web application. You don't have to use it this way. You can just start it up on the command line. You can also use it through a web browser, which is probably how you'll be using it today. Okay, let me give you a quick tour of the Sage website, and then a quick summary of Sage, and then I'll show you a demo. So here's the Sage website, and you can find it by typing Sage into Google. The address is sagemath.org. And you can see there's lots of, you know, when you get more into Sage, you'll want to look at the things at the top. But, you know, the big things are trying Sage out, downloading it, reading documentation, and finding out about other papers that use Sage. That's what you get if you, let's see. So you get lots of documentation. And I think that has papers that use Sage. I guess that's under publications. So Sage has been around for, you know, 5 years. So there aren't thousands of publications, but these are papers and preprints that use Sage. And most of them are in, I'd say, quite a few are in pure mathematics, but not all of them. There are certainly many numerical people that also use Sage. So here's something. Well, I saw IEEE and I thought it would be applied math, but it's actually elliptic curve cryptography, so I guess that's pretty exact. Okay. So just a quick tour with some high points. Let's see. So you can search the web page by typing a question in here in the top right, and then it just does a Google search of everything related to Sage, the mailing lists, the documentation, and so on. So that's an extremely handy box to know about. There's documentation, and I'll just click right here. So there's a tutorial. This is something that you sit down with for a couple of hours, maybe 3 hours. You can just read straight through the thing, and it gives you a pretty good sense of what Sage is about, and lots of examples of Stage. Constructions gives you examples of doing specific things in Sage. The developer's guide, which has improved a great deal recently, tells you basically how to contribute new code to Sage. And as I mentioned before, we've had around 200 people contribute code to Sage at this point. So we're really obsessed with making it, in a sense, easy for people to contribute code to Sage, but at the same time, we have many barriers to people contributing code to Sage because we want to keep the quality higher. For example, every line of code that people contribute to Sage gets refereed. We have a refereeing process. So it's like a journal article. You submit some code by attaching it to a certain track ticket, a certain bug tracker system we use, and then the code gets refereed by somebody, and they make comments on the code, and then you have to fix the code based on those comments. So there's a whole referee process, and of course a revision control system, and all these sort of standard tools from the bright pink toolbox that we like. And for example, this section of the developer's guide walks you through going from something you want to do to, you know, getting something into Sage. And so people find this very, very useful. The reference manual is pretty enormous. I think if you printed it out, it would be easily 4,000 or more pages in PDF format. And it's pretty comprehensive. You can see a lot of the topics are in the reference manual are things you know, commutative rings and algebraic number fields that are not the kind of standard tools that you use as a numerical person who does numerical computation. They're really important to people doing research in number theory, for example, and combinatorics. There's a huge amount of combinatorics code, which combinatorics includes things like graph theory and enumerating various finite structures with different properties. I think overall we have probably the best combinatorics capabilities of any system. Sage has had a huge amount of development in that direction, even though I don't do combinatorics, but other people have gotten involved who do. And there's really a huge amount of capabilities there. So there's lots of different things. Okay, and as far as downloading and installing Sage goes, that's just another one of the links that you click on here, the arrow. So it allows you to download Sage.
And you can choose from one of the mirror sites, and as they're listed, and it detects which operating system you're using. We have native binaries for all the standard Unix systems, so for Mac, for Linux. We fully support Linux on Itaniums, and we also support Solaris, finally. We are planning to support Cygwin, so you can just download the Sage source code, build it completely from source, or get a binary for Cygwin, so you can run it natively under Windows in the near future. We don't quite do that yet. We do have it running there, but we haven't released it yet. So that's the download situation. Currently, if you want to run Sage on Windows, the best way is to use a virtual machine, like what's being done in these Windows machines in this room. Okay, so that's Sage. Oh, let me show you the developer map. That's one other important thing. So under development, here's the mailing list that I mentioned. So there are a whole bunch of them. And you know, there's lots of acknowledgement of funding sources, that sort of thing. And there's a map, which hopefully you'll get on the map someday. But this has a little, there'll be a little star for each little blue star, for a little blue Sage icon, actually, at each place where somebody contributed code to Sage from that place. So you can see that Sage is a very worldwide effort. This makes, well, it's not just, you know, in Seattle or something like that, or in the United States. It's really all over the world, as you can see. Not so much, except, I guess, South Africa is represented. There's a lot in around Argentina and so on. And if you look down here, it has a list of the actual people and some discussion about what they contributed. So in a sense, the quick summary for all of that is Sage is yet another standard open source project. And it's the one for math software. So here's a summary, which is also on my t-shirt in case you miss it. So the mission statement of Sage is to create a viable alternative to Maple, Mathematica, MATLAB, and Magma. And the approach we're taking is to, in a sense, worry much more about building the car rather than reinventing the wheel. So we just view our kind of intellectual property, if you like, as being, you know, the whole world of open source that's GPL compatible, and then think, how can we build a product that rivals the MAs out of that, you know, range, that suite of available IP? That's really the perspective that we have. And you know, we ended up having to write a lot of new code, and we still are, more and more, but really we take the perspective of trying to build something, build a car rather than reinvent the wheel over and over again, which is different than any of the open source math software projects before. Usually open source math software projects, they start with C as the language or Lisp, and they try to implement stuff that's very relevant to their research and nothing else. And then maybe other people do the same. And they build a really nice, tight system, but it doesn't have the same sort of broad range as the MAs. So a quick summary. So Sage uses Python as the main language. So when you start typing into Sage and using it, you're using Python. The reason is that basically I was way too lazy to write my own language from scratch. I said, okay, what's the best language for a, you know, kind of an interpreter that a user could have literally typed into? And Python, after a bunch of evaluation, came up on top. And so we use a mainstream programming language. And it's turned out Python over the last 5 years, since I chose it, has really grown a lot in scientific computing and other areas. And a really cool kind of byproduct of using Python as our main language is that people can take any Python code out there that they find on the web or that they've already written or that's aimed at non-mathematical areas and combine it with their mathematical code in an easy way, in an easy, friendly interpreter. So we get that advantage over what you have with other systems like Mathematica. Yes?
So it's possible I'm doing it wrong, but I found Python can be kind of slow sometimes
for
mathematical calculations.
Yes. If you make a little for loop to, you know, implement something like Newton's method or bisection, it can easily be 100 times slower than writing a code directly in C or Fortran. And we spent a lot of time addressing that, and I'll talk a lot about that. But pure Python as an interpreter language only is not at all sufficient for writing a serious computer algebra system or mathematical software system. However, Python plus Cython, which is a compiled variant of Python that has C data types, that is something that allows you to build code that's just as fast as anything you'd write in any other system. With all the other, I mean, you still can write code that segfaults and stuff like that, but there's a lot of support for memory management in Cython. So, okay, another thing is, Sage, because of the way it's architected, it links together a lot of other existing systems. I don't want to name names because you probably haven't heard of a lot of them, but there are a whole bunch of systems that it links together, and it does that in a very straightforward way. Either we write some sort of C library interface, or if that is impossible or it's too hard for the time being, we just write something using pseudo TTYs. So that gets us, it makes it so we can call the capabilities of the system and use it, and then we get going from there. And then we can replace the pseudo TTY by a C library interface at some point. And in fact, Sage has, you can call from Sage Mathematica, Maple, MATLAB, and essentially every math software system you can think of, there's some interface between Sage and that system. We needed these interfaces to kind of build stuff together, and we also needed them in order to benchmark Sage against other systems. So every step of the way, we're always obsessed with performance, so we need to easily be able to benchmark the exact same calculation on a bunch of systems, and these interfaces make that easy. And just to emphasize, we tried as much as we can to contribute to existing libraries and to build on them rather than starting over. So for example, NumPy, R, Atlas, CVX.gsl, and SciPy, these are all examples of numerical libraries that are maybe somewhat C or Python friendly. Some of them are written in Python, and Sage includes all of them. So anytime you have a Sage install anywhere, it has at least all of those components there, and support for using them. And then finally, the graphical user interface for Sage is built as a web application. It's an Ajax application, very similar to Google Mail or Google Maps or something like that. And this means that we can use Java plugins easily. We can use anything that's written in JavaScript and kind of integrate that with Sage. Okay. And this is very different than, say, writing our graphical user interface as a native local application where we'd have to, choose widget toolkits and build it for different platforms and have to worry about subtle things involving sharing data between different users. Okay, so enough of all that. What is Sage? Here it is. 2+2. Let's see if it works. It has to start up. That's not good. I'm refreshing the page because I've been changing networks all day. So notice that what I'm doing here is I'm looking at a web page which is on localhost. There's a local web server which I've started up in the background. Now the web page is loading, and now I can use Sage. So what you get is a notebook interface. It's a lot like Mathematica or Maple's interface. You have HTML, and then you have these input and output cells where you type code. You can type a whole bunch of lines of code. It's basically Python code. If you know Python, this will look very familiar. You just type in a bunch of code and you hit Shift Enter, or you click on the little evaluate button, and it runs that code. There are also a bunch of directives that you can type. For example, you can type percent GP, which is another language that's included with Sage, or you can type percent Lisp. Actually, let me try that. I'm not sure if this will work, but you can type percent Lisp and then do something in Lisp, maybe. Yep, there you are. So there's a whole bunch of different systems included in Sage, and you can switch into them by putting percent in the system. And if you have something like Mathematica installed in your computer, then you can put percent Mathematica and put a block of Mathematica code. So you can mix a whole bunch of different systems. And it keeps a persistent system, it keeps a persistent copy of that system open. So if I set this, the list that Sage includes, if I set a variable there, then it would still be there in the successive cells. I can show you a quick example of, say, Mathematica. This won't work for you because Mathematica is probably not installed in the virtual machine that I gave you, but you could do, integrate sine of x, just a simple integral. This will start up one copy of Mathematica, keep it running, and now you can feed code into it. You can also access that code from outside of the cells. So that's what the Sage Notebook is. It's a graphical user interface that allows you to interact with basically all the math software you can think of out there. Okay, so I'm just going to show you like 5 or 10 different categories of computations, some that involve lots of big numbers, I'll get to your question in a second, and then some that involve numerical computation. And then we're going to take a break and switch to step-by-step hands-on tutorial, just in case you're falling asleep. Okay, so yes, the question in the back.
Regarding Mathematica,
yes.
For example, if I have a guy with MATLAB, would I be MATLAB?
Sort of. What you could do is you can move it through Sage. I don't think I have MATLAB on here. Let's see what I can do. So, I'll just show you something that involves moving something from one system to another. So I've defined F in a Mathematica session, and now I can get at F in the sense that I can get, for example, its string representation, and in some cases I can convert the thing to a Sage object. So let's try that here. I think it's Sage. Oh, sorry, it's dot Sage. It's a method. So that converted the symbolic expression x squared plus 1 from Mathematica to Sage. Sage has its own native implementation of symbolic expressions, which is built on top of GNAC, which is, people here may have heard of that. It's a large C++ library written by physicists for doing symbolic calculations. And that's what Sage uses at its core for symbolic expressions. So now this object, which I'll call G for the moment, is now in Sage. And now, let's see, I don't know if I have Maple on here even, or set up correctly. This will work if I happen to have Maple set up. Okay, so now there it is in Maple. So I've moved something from Mathematica to Maple. And I moved it through Sage. Yes, in the back.
Well, this is pretty impressive to me. I mean, we have MATLAB and Mathematica. So you can actually use this as a bridge? So.
Yes, yeah. However, if you have a very complicated data structure in MATLAB, and you want to convert it, you know, to convert it, you're going to have to write some code. But this provides an infrastructure on which to build your own code to provide conversions. It doesn't magically convert everything to everything without any work, but it does provide a nice kind of, like a foundation for building conversions. Yes?
Do you have to do anything to MATLAB or Mathematica?
No. Absolutely nothing. It's just, all you need is a command, you know, MATLAB in your path. And a command. But actually, all it's doing is it's using exactly the same sort of code that, you know, the bash prompt uses to interact with subprocesses. It's just kind of like a simulated bash prompt sitting there, or a command prompt. Okay. Except it just runs a whole bunch of them, one for each of the processes that you're talking to. Any other questions? But this is, I mean, this is something that it's not one of the most important things of Sage, but it is a nice capability that's there. So here's an example involving big numbers. So just to show you some things that are very Sage-like. So here's an example of computing a million factorial. You know, not 70 factorial, which is pretty big, but a million factorial, which is a very large number. It has, as you can see, over 5 million digits. And so this gets computed exactly, not as a floating point value, but as an exact 5 million digit number in less than a second. And then here's doing arithmetic with that large number. It takes 0.3 seconds. So you can do just basic arithmetic with absolutely enormous numbers in Sage efficiently. Here's another example to show you something big. There's no reason to do that twice. I've just created a matrix that's 200 by 200. Each of the entries are integers. This ZZ right here denotes the collection of all integers. This makes a random 200 by 200 matrix where the entries are at most 128 bits. Here's what one of the entries looks like. And now I'm going to compute the determinant of that random matrix, which will be pretty big. I mean, if you imagine, you know, you're multiplying together a lot of numbers to compute that determinant. And just to show you that Sage likes working with big numbers, there's the determinant. So it's pretty big. And you know, it took under 3 seconds to do that calculation. So I'm just showing you some of the very algebraic types of things that Sage can do. And I think determinants of large integer matrices, Sage is faster than anything else out there. Yes?
How do you keep a log?
So, well, for one thing, you see it in the, there it is in the worksheet, but there is a link at the top called log, and this records the last, it's configurable, but it has the last 500 inputs in any worksheet if you click on it. So if you've, you know, done stuff in various places, you can't remember where it is, or you deleted it by accident, it'll be sitting in the log. So you can click there, and it's just a history of the last 500 inputs in any cell. And there's also, if you click on home, you get a list of your worksheets, and it's searchable. You can just do a full text search on all the worksheets. So this shows every worksheet that has the word determinant in it. So there's quite a few. So it's an environment, it's really modeled on Google Documents. If you used Google Documents about 3 years ago, you'd see that it looks very similar to this. Google Documents got kind of remodeled quite a lot, but it used to look like this. Okay, so going back to where we were, so back to the demo, some big numbers, so one of Sage's fortes, but you can also do calculus. So here's an example of defining a symbolic function, e to the x sine of x squared plus x. Then you can plot it, and there you are. There's a plot of the function. You can do symbolic integration, and it can handle fairly wide range of symbolic integrals. The integration by default is done using Maxima, which is a computer algebra system. It's the first computer algebra system. It was written in Lisp starting in the 60s, but it's still under active and sometimes chaotic development. But it does a few things in Sage. It doesn't do everything. It does actually a very little part of Sage, but one important part is it does symbolic integration by default. There's another system called SymPy, which is a pure Python symbolic computation library, which is also in Sage, and one can use that alternatively for doing symbolic integration. Okay. Here's an example of graph theory, so vertices and edges. There's lots of graphs built into Sage. If you type graphs.tab, you see a big list of different functions that make various sorts of graphs, and there's not just one graph for each function. Many of these have a parameter, multiple parameters. For example, all these random graphs have parameters that determine, you know, what distribution the graph is chosen from. So let's choose this amusingly named Flower Snark graph, which is a graph on 20 vertices. If you type graph editor, you get a picture of the graph, and you can move around the vertices, you know, to make it more pleasing if you want. You can, in fact, also add vertices and edges and so on. And you can click live, and it will update the position layout. And one of the nice things about this also is this illustrates we're starting to use HTML5 a bunch in the notebook, and this is the HTML5 canvas tag, which allows you to nicely draw bitmapped graphics and manipulate things very efficiently in web browsers. We also have 3D plotting that is built on top of this canvas tag. And it's getting to be more and more supported in web browsers. So there's no plugin required or anything, except I think on Microsoft Internet Explorer. But on all the other browsers, it's fully supported. And we plan to have a lot of other components of Sage, or visualization capabilities and objects that you can interact with, where you're working in a web browser, don't need to install anything special on your computer, but they'll be built kind of to look like this. For example, there's another project called FemHub, which is a finite element method group in University of Nevada, and I'll show you their website in a second, but they've adapted the graph editor to make an editor for making little finite element method meshes. And they use this in teaching classes on FEM. Any questions? Okay, and just to illustrate that, you know, please.
Yes. The plotting, can I connect that to Matplotlib?
So a lot of capabilities for graphs in Sage are implemented using Matplotlib. Matplotlib is one of the components of Sage. If you want to use anything in Matplotlib, you can just say, you know, import Matplotlib. It comes with every copy of Sage. Sorry. I was thinking of Network X in the previous sentence, but everything I said is technically also true of Matplotlib. So, sorry about that. Network X is what we implement a lot of our graph theory functionality on. A standard library in Python for plotting is called Matplotlib. And in fact, you can plot by saying, say, g.plot. I think it looks better with the border, graph border equals true. You can say g.plot, graph border equals true, and then it draws this. And this is drawn using Matplotlib. So you can get a Matplotlib object. It doesn't use the layout algorithm in Network X. It uses our own Spring layout algorithm that we've implemented. Actually, in this case, all the graphs in graphs.tab have predefined layouts that a student tediously went through and implemented. So that's why this one looks really good by default. So a lot of capabilities in Sage are implemented, built on top of Network X, at least for graph theory. But there's also a lot that's been natively implemented in Sage from scratch. And just an example of that is there's an algorithm which, in total generality, will compute the automorphism group of a graph, so the set of permutations of the vertices that preserve edges. Obviously, if the graph is enormous, this would, you know, the complexity gets very bad. But at least for moderately sized graphs, it'll terminate very quickly. There's only one other implementation of a general algorithm for doing this, in a program called Naughty, which is a standalone C program. And that implementation has various drawbacks. It's sort of open source in that you can look at the code, but the code has weird, has funny license restrictions. For example, you can't use it for anything that's related to military applications. So it's not GPL compatible because the GPL doesn't let you, you know, restrict your software to non-military purposes only. So we've written from scratch code. When I say we, I mean one particular graduate student. It took him like 6 or 8 months at least to write this code, but it's a pretty tricky thing. He's the only other person that's ever implemented this, so it's in Sage, and it's pretty nice code to look at, actually. So it just shows some of the deeper algorithms that are in there. As I mentioned before, Sage includes R, the statistics program. It includes scipy.stats. That's just a module in scipy. Scipy is one of the standard libraries for scientific computing in Python. And it also includes GSL. So these are three libraries with substantial statistics capabilities. And I'm not going to give you examples of using R from Sage, but there are two ways you can use it. Well, maybe I'll add two numbers in R at least. So you can do, just like I showed you before, you can do that sort of thing. Oops. Oh, I think I defined R somewhere above in another example. So what I just did with reset, if you define a variable, overloading what it is when you started up Sage, you could say reset in that variable name, and it resets it back to the default value when you started up Sage. So that's what I had to do to get R back. These percent modes are really very simple and customizable. All it is if you make any Python object at all that has an eval method, then it just gets called. So this percent something, and then you put some code in there, it just gets turned into something.eval in the code. So it's a pretty simple mechanism. There's a little bit more to it than that, but it's basically what you do. So this calls R and does a calculation. You can also call R through RPy. 2, I think it's called, which is a C library interface to R. So if you have, you know, an enormous matrix and you want to copy it over to R efficiently, then you have to use RPy 2. You don't want to use a pseudo TTY. So there's both the C library interface and this interface. And then scipy stats, that's, I'll just show you. If you do import scipy.stats and then scipy.stats. If you hit the tab key, then it tries to complete what you're doing. So in this case, scipy.stats.tab, that shows each of the stats functions in scipy. And you can see there's quite a few. And if you click on one of them, then you could say question mark and hit the tab key. And it shows you help about that particular function. So there's a lot in scipy also. Okay, and just to draw some pretty pictures, here's an example of making a random walk with 1 million steps and then plotting it, and then plotting a histogram, and then, you know, computing various numbers associated to that data. And then also this shows symbolic statistics, so to speak, so the standard deviation of the three numbers 1, pi, and e. Kind of silly, but notice that not everything is automatically converted to double precision float, which, you know, may annoy you. If you do want things to be converted to double precision float, then I think that's what happens if you use scipy.stats. Probably, I'm guessing that either I'll get a huge error or this will give, I don't even know what that means. Deprecation warning. Please update your code. Use numpy.std. Okay, that's fair enough. So they're telling me that I should use numpy. And then I do this. And there it is, and it looks like it does leave it symbolic. Okay, so apparently it sort of does. It's kind of a weird mix. It uses floating point numbers, but then it combines them together. So one thing you can see here is that the functions in Sage that are sort of just right there available at the top level where you don't have to import anything, they're the ones that kind of are, you know, they're the most polished ones. And funny things can happen when you start importing other libraries and calling functions in those libraries. That's where things get a little more rough. But sometimes that's what you have to do. Here's an example of hidden Markov models. So there's a nice, I think, implementation of hidden Markov models in Sage. And it's pretty general. It does discrete hidden Markov models, and it does pretty general hidden Markov models. Here's an example of a Gaussian mixture hidden Markov model. So the missions are linear combinations of Gaussian distributions. So this is pretty relevant for for DNA analysis and so on. Okay, Fortran, I'm just going to show you an example of using Fortran in Sage. which I found by searching for the word Fortran on the public Sage notebook server. So just like you can write percent, you know, Mathematica, use Mathematica in a cell, you can write percent Fortran, and now suddenly you have a Fortran notebook, a graphical interface to Fortran. You can write Fortran. You can see how this could be useful if you're teaching a course or just working. So here's somebody who put percent Fortran at the top and then copied something from this book called A Practical Guide to Splines. And so that's the code. It's just a bunch of Fortran code. And now he just evaluates it, and now he has that Fortran function available in Sage. And you can type question mark, and he finds out what the inputs are, and you can call the function, types get converted, and you get converted back. So that...
I've got a question.
Yes, please.
For something like this, where you've got to compile it before you can run it, you have to tell Sage what compiler you want to use and what options
you want. You don't have to tell it. So let's see. How does it all work? By default, it'll use gFortran, and it uses options that work. If you really care, you can look at the Fortran command and figure out how to customize it. But in fact, what it does is in your distribution of Sage, so if you look at, I'll just go into my, make this big. This is a nice thing to see at some point. So here's my Sage install. This is what the top level of the Sage install looks like. Sorry, that's kind of transparent. So hopefully you can see that. Okay. But if you go into the local bin directory, by the way, Sage is completely self-contained. If you want to have Sage version 4.4.1 on your system and Sage version 3.5 and Sage version 4.3 all at once, you can do that just fine. It doesn't have to be installed system-wide or anything. You just have one directory for each copy of Sage, and Sage and all of its dependencies are included in that directory, which is, I think, very nice because, you know, maybe a new bug is introduced and you're really annoyed. Instead of having to quit using Sage, just keep using the old version until that bug gets fixed and complain. In any case, if you go into the local bin directory, this has all the commands that are compiled as part of or that are included in Sage. And one of them is just something called Sage Fortran. It's just a tiny little shell script. And you can change that. And that's what gets used by percent Fortran in the notebook. So one way, if you're just using it yourself, you're you know, a power user, you can just change this to do whatever you want, whatever options you want, and so on. Of course, you want something a little more systematic if you're trying to distribute this to other people. Now, the thing is, Fortran, of course, gets used a lot by the sorts of codes you guys work with. If you talk to random number theorists, like Felipe, do you use Fortran very much? There you are. So us number theorists don't use Fortran very much because number theorists work with really big numbers, and Fortran works with double precision numbers more. And, I mean, there's other reasons, but it's mainly for historical reasons we don't use it so much. So this Fortran in the notebook hasn't been sort of polished and pushed as much as you might like. On the other hand, using Fortran from Python is something that's been done a lot. SciPy, that, the Python library that is for scientific computing, a lot of it's written in Fortran, so they have a lot of work there. There's something called F2Py, which is takes Fortran code and creates Python bindings automatically, and this is used a lot in the numerical Python world. That said, I think the main author of F2Py has sort of abandoned it, and it's just in maintenance mode right now. And Google funded a project last summer called FWrap, which is going to be part of Python very soon, and FWrap is all about making it very easy to use Fortran code from Cython, which is this compiled variant of Python. And it is not in the current version of Cython, but it will be there very soon. So there is work that... there's a lot of people doing numerical computing with Python. They care about making it easy to use Fortran from Python. So the main point of this particular slide is just to show you that, you know, here's a notebook interface, which is really nice. You can put percent Fortran and just start coding right there in the notebook, and you can get code that you can then use from an interpreter. And if you can see the possibilities, maybe the slight additional work that's probably needed if you wanted to use this seriously in your research is something you might do. But you can see pretty pictures, and it works. So it's kind of nice to be able to combine, be able to draw pretty pictures like that with actually writing the Fortran code all in one place. Okay, so Fortran, yes. Oh, here's a nice example of matrices. Let me show you. I'll show you what happens. So I took a picture of the computer over there, and what this does is it takes a matrix
which represents the grayscale image of the computer over there. And it computes a singular value decomposition and compresses the image using just, say, the first 34 eigenvalues. So it's a big O of 34 amount of data rather than the whole picture. And you can see how dragging the slider changes how clear the picture is. So with more eigenvalues, it looks a lot better. And with less eigenvalues, it looks pretty bad. So that's pretty blurry. And here's the actual code that completely implements this. And I'll go through it little by little. But just note that what you have here is some sort of numerical computation going on that involves singular value decomposition of a matrix. There's also a graphical interface with a slider that you can drag, and a checkbox that you can click if you want to get rid of the annoying numbers on the sides, and so on. And the entire thing is made in a web browser by typing just that code that's right there. So the code, first it imports PyLab. PyLab is matplotlib. Really, it's a certain interface to matplotlib meant to look very MATLAB-like. And what you do is you load an image. I've attached an image to this worksheet. I'm going to go to the top to show you how I did that. I just said data, upload or create file. It's the same thing as you would do in Google Docs. And I just uploaded that file, lonestar.png, and now I can use it from anywhere in the worksheet, like this. So you can attach all kinds of data to a worksheet, and some of it you can edit and so on. Okay, so it computes the mean of the image, that's the computer over there. Then I define a function, I'll get back to the at interacting. I define a function that takes as inputs number I and whether or not to display axes. And what it does is it computes a singular value decomposition on the image. It then takes a certain number of the eigenvalues, and then it makes a picture out of that, and then plots the picture. And the this thing right here, which is called a Python decorator, the at sign and then interact, what that does is if you stick it before a function in the Sage notebook, it analyzes each of the inputs to the function, looks at what their default values are. In this case, the default values, well, you have to read the documentation, but this means make a slider with a default value of 20 and labeled with this. This one means make a checkbox, that's what the true there tells you, with this label. What it does is it analyzes each input to the function, makes a little graphical interface that allows you to manipulate all the inputs to the function. If you've used Mathematica, this is similar to the manipulate command in Mathematica. But it's very simple. You just take any function, put add interact before it, make sure you have default inputs for the various variables in your function, and suddenly you have a web-based graphical interface to your function, which in the back end could be calling you arbitrarily complicated Fortran code or whatever. Okay, questions?
Well,
yes?
I kind of had one. You can pull this thing out and make it an object on some public web page, right?
Not quite. That will be the case soon, but it's not the case today. The only way you can make this available to other people is to publish this worksheet like I've done, and then tell them, go to a Sage notebook login, get an account login, and then just make a copy of the worksheet and start using it. But there's no way to make it completely separate, and like you can't just stick it in your blog or something like that. The code is mostly written to do that. I got some NSF funding, I hired somebody, he mostly did it, and then he disappeared. But he fortunately made all of this code available, so and I have some time in the near future to do that. This is requested every single week, almost, on the Sage list. Somebody wants to be able to take these, because it's hard to make a web application. I mean, it's hard to do kind of a web application that communicates with an offline server. Basically, setting up an AJAX program takes some work. This makes it really, really easy. It doesn't give you a huge amount of control. It's just, it takes the inputs and lays out the controls, but all the things like figuring out how to use jQuery, that JavaScript library to make various widgets, it's all done for you automatically. And there's a lot of controls. Let me just do, if I type interact ? I'll give you a sense of how many different controls are supported. So these are all examples, but these are the different controls. So there's lots and lots of different things. Input grids, matrices, sliders, input boxes, color pickers, and so on. So there's really a lot that's there. Okay. All right, another example before we get to the tutorials. FemHub. So FemHub is an open source distribution of finite element codes with a unified Python interface. So this is developed at University of Nevada. And what they have here is something called their online lab, which looks a little bit like the Sage notebook. If you look at the right, this looks like the login screen for the Sage notebook. However, they've customized everything so that it has, you know, a message about FemHub, and it has, you know, FemHub graphics all over the place, and so on. And behind the scenes, the actual code that runs, it's Python plus a whole bunch of libraries relevant to finite element methods. And they took all the symbolic stuff, like for computing determinants of matrices with large entries and that sort of thing. They just threw all that away and deleted it. They make a distribution which is which is built on top of some of Sage and gives you just the stuff they want, plus they added all this finite element stuff. And then their students use it and other people use it. And you can browse the published worksheets without even creating an account. And you can see various examples of how this gets used. That's probably a bad choice because somebody rated it zero to click on, but probably should have chosen this one. So I guess this is an example of doing some finite element thing. Maybe I'll choose this one because it has a 4 in the rating. So you can see it's a bunch of code, and then this is, in fact, you can do matplotlib plotting just directly like you would do in matplotlib and have it appear in the web browser. And that's, notice that I was going to show the IRC chat room for Sage. That's what that popped up from. So this is just, I don't know. I mean, it's numerical code and then some pictures all together on a web in a web browser, all free and open source. That's the point. Three-dimensional plots. So here's a 3D plot. This is, there's something called JMOL, which is a Java library for molecular visualization, for drawing molecules. And we couldn't find any robust open source free math plotting Java programs. Couldn't find anything at all. There were some really good ones that were closed source, but there was nothing open source. And so what we ended up finally doing, there's something called Java 3D, which you could probably do this sort of thing with, but getting it to install on a random computer and really work robustly wasn't happening. So, and it was huge. I mean, people spent huge amounts of time, but we just couldn't get it to really be reliable at the time. So what we did was we took this molecular visualization program, and we turned it into a math plotting program. That's what we're using right here. There are other ways of drawing plots. For example, if I do equals tachyon, this is a ray tracer, then it'll draw the same image, but it ray traces it and then displays a static PNG image. By the way plotting works is there's lots of 3D plotting, so you can plot a function of two variables, and you can add it to another plot and superimposes them, and you can set things like opacities, and you can, there's all, you know, all these sort of capabilities. You can put grids on there and so on. Notice now I can't move it around or anything because it's just plotted as a PNG image. But the default is to draw these plots. So here's an example of an implicit 3D plot. So I write down an equation, and then I plot it. What it does is it evaluates this function p at lots of points, and then figures out a way to interpolate. So I should be able to, I don't know why this is slow. It should be really fast. Actually, my whole browser seems a little slow. Well, maybe that's because I have this plot right here, which has something like 50,000 triangles of Yoda, which is being plotted by the same thing. Interestingly, this doesn't use OpenGL at all. It doesn't even use 3D acceleration. It's just pure 2D Java. So it runs with very low requirements on the user. Namely that they have Java, which is unfortunately not a non-trivial requirement, it seems still, but there you are. So that's also an illustration of a capability from SciPy to load a mesh file. And the browser, the viewer is actually pretty good. They have a lot of cool capabilities in here for like 3D viewers and stuff like that. Okay, so now I'm basically done with the talk. Oh, one other thing, if you're interested in 3D plotting, Sage, really at the end of the day, what Sage is it's Python, a bunch of Python libraries packaged together. And so if there's something else written in Python and you really want to use it, you can. And just to give you an example of the range of 3D visualization tools that are available for Python, there's Maya VI, which is a Python interface to BTK, which surely everyone here has heard of. It's a very large open source C++ library for 3D visualization, which is, you know, very serious for numerical work. There's something called Chaco, which is does interactive 2D graphics, which is developed by nThought, which is a local company here in Austin. And I'm sure they'd love to help you with that. Visit and ParaView are two high-end visualization systems that I noticed there'll be a workshop here at TAC about soon. And there are Python, there are ways to interact with both of those using Python. And there's also vPython, which is
I can show you their website. 3D programming for ordinary mortals. So that's what that's their tagline. And there's even Pi Game, which maybe it has some 3D capabilities in it. So there's that. And you could install this into Sage and then use it. So none of these are included in Sage, but if you're really serious about using Sage, you can install them into Sage. So key things to take away. One, Sage is free and open source software. It's all GPLv2 plus, maybe it's all GPLv3 plus compatible. And for example, Deal.2, unfortunately, they seem to be licensed under the QPL. So it seems like you can't combine Sage with that software and redistribute the result. But you could combine it on your own computer, which might be fine for you. Sage is built on Python, which is a very mainstream language, certainly in the top 5 or 10 most popular languages. It uses Cython a lot, which we'll see a lot more of in the third tutorial. There are interfaces to lots of different mathematical software included in Sage. Sage itself is self-contained, so if you want to build Sage from source, the procedure is a lot different than some software. Instead of you download the software and you try to build it and realize you don't have one of the dependencies, you download Sage, you type make, and then you wait a couple hours and it builds itself and all dependencies. And either it just works when you type 4 letters make or you're in trouble. But there's no real middle ground. You write to the mailing lists, or you pop onto this IRC chat room and you say, hi, help. It won't work. And maybe somebody will help you. You can see that this is the IRC chat room for Sage development. And people pop in here all the time. You can see there are 32 people logged in right now. And often they can be helpful. So, although nobody seems to. What?
They're all completely speechless. They didn't need help.
Yeah, they don't believe it. and then there's, as I mentioned before, the code that goes into Sage is peer reviewed. And I think little by little over time, at least in my community, and pure mathematics research, there's been no place to get your code peer-reviewed. I don't know. This is different in science, I think. I think that there is more along the way of peer review for code, but at least in pure math, it's been very hard. So you have that, and there's a web-based notebook. So questions, a break, and then we'll go through the two tutorials. Okay? So questions? Anybody in the back?
Can you get good quality output from your class? Because that's pretty good for getting that accuracy.
Yes.
Maybe a TPS or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So in the next tutorial, I'll show you how to take a plot and save it as a PDF or an EPS file or an SVG file. Matplotlib, which was mentioned earlier, supports all these output formats, and the 2D plots in Sage are done using Matplotlib, so you can output them in all of those formats, so suitable for inclusion in papers. So the answer is definitely yes. Other questions? Okay, so let's stop and start up again in about 5 minutes, okay? And in the meantime, try to type 2+2 if you're bored. Otherwise, see you in about 5 minutes. For the tutorial.
So if we do not already have a Sage Notebook account, we should make one.
There should be, the ones that are installed up here, you can just type, I think you could just log in as a admin with. Oh, no, that's sageandd.org. Actually, if you go to, this is your own app.
Yeah, no, this is
the one. If you just click here, it'll start at the end of it. You should just be one. Oh, so here it says type notebook. Or you could double click on sage. And this is going to run entirely on this computer. And then what you'll have to do is you'll have to download the worksheet, and I'll show you how to do that for the two tutorials, since they're not installed in here.